Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Ron Coleman of counsel at Dillon Law Group, Inc. With over 30 years of experience, Ron specializes in litigation, trademarks, and defamation. He's renowned for his work in free speech and technology litigation. Notably, Ron successfully represented Simon Tam in a landmark Supreme Court trademark case. He is a super lawyer and recipient of the Independent OSCON Award, among many others. He's also the host of the Coleman Nation podcast, where he explores legal and cultural issues with diverse guests. Ron's mission is to protect and defend the rights of individuals and businesses against censorship and unfair competition. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and help us business folk navigate our love-hate relationship with government. So, Ron, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. And I thank you for inviting me onto the program.
Yeah, it's an honor and a pleasure. Before we get into some of the maybe meatier stuff, how did you even get into this? Do you come from a long line of lawyers or freedom fighters? Were your parents in this battle? Oh, and you just took the torch?
That's a great question. I'm actually the first person in my family, in my direct line, to ever attend college. In fact, I hardly knew any lawyers when I started law school. I had to ask a college roommate's father to recommend me, to endorse me for the bar, because I didn't know. I didn't know any professionals. My father was an orphan. My mother was, in other words, he was raised by his grandmother. Wow. My mother came to this country in the 1950s. It was the great working class people who worked very hard, and I had the opportunity to go to college and go to law school. But it's an interesting question whether I'm from a line of freedom fighters. Most of my ancestors didn't really have the opportunity to fight for a lot of freedom because they lived in Eastern Europe, which is not known for its freedom. But in fact, I am named after an uncle who was my mother's uncle, who actually was an activist in his time
really?
And place. Yeah.
Got it. Maybe it's in the blood a little bit.
I think so.
Yeah. Congrats on how far you've come. I'm sure your father would be very
Thank you.
Proud. I was an orphan, and I'm trying to have as many kids as I can, and I just want them to live and prosper. And I'd be super proud if I had a son that's accomplished what you have.
That's very nice of you. Thank you. I'm very proud of my children.
Yeah. Oh, how many kids do you have?
I have four children, three of whom are married, one of whom is hopefully will be soon.
Wow.
And I have grandchildren for many of them.
That's fantastic. That's such a blessing. I think people don't realize what a blessing kids are. So you got recommended for the bar, you became a lawyer, and the clouds parted and it was sunshine and rainbows and God threw blessings upon you. And you've just been living in a, is that, yeah, am I, is no, no?
No, not at all. Not at all. One of the things, so some people are able to come from a background like mine where they don't have familiarity with the world of the professions or professional education and adapt to it very well. They know exactly how to succeed. I didn't. I did have a good head, so I was able to always proceed and succeed academically. But as a young professional, I was pretty clueless, and it took me a very long time to learn how to be a good law firm associate, a junior lawyer, and to come to terms, even it took me even longer to come to terms with the fact that I'm not really an organization man, that I wasn't cut out to be in a large law firm following orders, doing things the way everyone else does. And eventually I did. And I am fortunate that I'm able to more or less practice law on my own terms now. But it was an uphill battle. Between, again, the social acculturation, which I don't blame anyone for. It's just, like I said, lots of people from similar backgrounds get it. They got no problem. I didn't. But it took me a while.
So what would you recommend to someone who's starting out and struggling right now? Like they're in a similar position, maybe different industry or different field, but
you really do need to listen to try to figure out what it is that's wrong. Are you doing the wrong thing? In other words, is it the wrong profession or the wrong kind of work? Or are you just in the wrong place? Or is it the wrong kind of specialty? There was a point where I was in a law firm, a very prominent Park Avenue law firm, which used to be a kind of prominent place for law firms to be. And I was transferred because of just as a junior person, you go wherever they need you. And I was transferred to the bankruptcy department. And I hated it so much so much because I'm a commercial litigator. What I do is I represent clients who are involved in disputes, usually business disputes, although increasingly constitutional or free speech kinds of disputes. But that work happened to have been slow at the time. This was in the early 90s. And there was a lot of need for bankruptcy lawyers. And I just hated it so much. And I realized that if that was what I was going to have to do to make a living, I probably would have to find some other way of making a living because I knew I couldn't be happy doing that. Mm-hmm. But in my case, a number of things, you have to listen to your inner voice. Mm-hmm. And if you don't see yourself ever being happy doing the work under any circumstances, then you should start looking for something that's going to make you happy sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's a great, life is long, but it's also too short to spend it doing something you hate. And that's the life happens for you, not to you. And so that might be a sign that you're getting that, you know, you're going the wrong way. Yeah,
it's a little bit of a luxury. My ancestors in Poland and Czechoslovakia, they mostly had to do whatever they could do from a very limited list of options, being a butcher, being whatever it was, to make sure that their families didn't starve.
Right.
So we live in a time and place of great abundance. And I had the benefit of excellent parents and excellent education and living in a land of freedom and liberty to some extent.
Some extent, yeah.
You're a libertarian, so I don't want to use those words too loosely in your presence. But I do have the privilege of being able to have a great deal of choice over what I'll do for a living. But I do think that there are people who are better at sucking it up or less likely to be dissatisfied. I'm a firstborn and maybe a gifted child. So your expectations for life are high. You got to sometimes buck up and look, you do have to pay your dues. And that was one of the things I also had to learn was know yourself, know what you want to do and what you think could make you happy, but you will never be happy doing what you do until you're good at it. And
right.
You won't get
good at it until
you pay your dues, until you learn the hard way the kind of mistakes not to make and how to be patient and how to really become a master or a craftsman at what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And also, like you said before, you have to know your personal taste. I remember an ex-girlfriend of mine, we went to Japan together for 3 years, and she was the type of person, if you gave her a 10-step checklist, she would do that checklist better than 100,000 other people. She would excel at that better than anyone else. But if you remove step 8, she was like an ant that just didn't know where to go. And I remember she crushed it. She went to Japan to teach English in the beginning, and she was always a top teacher everywhere we went. She just hammered and mastered. She was beautiful too. That kind of goes a long way as well. But she She did that checklist so well. But that was the yin yang of our relationship, where just if step 8 was missing, I'm like, it's right there. Just step over 8 to 9. Like it's, and she just couldn't see the forest for the trees. But that's
that I want to suggest, I think that more women are like that than they are like what I think is you and me.
Right.
Which has certain advantages to it, because I think if you're risk averse, if your emphasis is on security and certainty, and if you're the mom that you want your family to be exposed to less risk.
Mm-hmm.
You don't cross the street until the light turns green, because you
yeah.
just absolutely. And we're the guys who have to go, listen, if I wait for the light to turn green, I'm not going to catch that woolly mammoth. And
yeah.
I'm going to have to find something else for us to hunt. And yep. Hell with it, I'm going to cross the street. And some percentage of us are going to get hit by a buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the way it goes. No, I agree with you 100%. I agree.
Maybe men, I'm just throwing that out.
No, but we're like the white blood vessels of a society. Like we're the ones that stand for the most part. We're the ones getting conscripted to the army, being shipped out on boats to fight off the hoarding barbarians trying to invade. That's there's a little bit of risk involved in that.
But not only that, but also building the bridges and designing all those appliances that we're the only ones who can move.
Right. Fighting fires.
Men and women in this world, they yeah. have, we're not exactly the same. And there are many women who do certain manly things better than some men do, and vice versa. We all get that. But in my house, I do happen to be literally twice the size of my wife.
Yeah.
And she's at least as smart as I am, got into schools that I didn't get into, but there's no one else is going to lift that air conditioner.
Right. Yeah. There's some real world realities to this sort of thing. We're on the same page. I'm in the Philippines at the time of this recording, And I don't want, we don't need to go deep down this topic, but what I love about the Philippines is there's, I don't feel like there's the same confusion about certain issues and there's still acceptance. So what I mean is that I'll meet trans people here and they go, hi, I'm a gay trans. Cool. Be you. But they're not competing in women's sports and they're not trying to say that, they're just, none of that other stuff is with it. Like, it's just, oh, cool. That's you. Cool. I hope you're happy with the decisions you've made. That's great. We're not having issues like Canada's got the number one female Olympic weightlifter who used to compete as a man before. And the Olympic weightlifting team's coach was so pissed off, unannounced. He signed up for the lab. This is 2021, I think. He signed up for the competition and he just dummied this other person and smashed all of his records. And now he's the new women's title holder. Cause he was just pointing out the preposterousness of it. CrossFit did it really well. They said, if you want to come compete in the women's division, that's fine. But we need 4 years of quarterly tests proving that your testosterone levels are within the female parameters. If you could do that for 4 years, we'll give you a shot. And there's been no one. There's no one playing that game in CrossFit. So testosterone is a performance enhancing drug. And not telling anyone who they have to be, but we have weight classes and divisions and sports for a reason. And so that's, we, at some point we have to accept that we live in a physical world with physical properties. And if I throw this baseball up in the air, if I don't move out from under it, it's going to smack me in the head, no matter how much I want to tell myself that it's not. There's, so yeah, anyways, I, we don't have to go super deep down on that, but this is one of the things I did want to talk to you about was, obviously you've got some expertise here. So in 2020, everybody was arguing about the science of this, the science of that. And the man, I was an orphan too. And the man that raised me, my step adopted dad, he worked in applied physics and geology, hard sciences. And it got me thinking, what does the science have to say about business success? I got a longer story, but for the sake of it being your interview, not mine. So I ended up hiring 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success from all around the world. We looked at Harvard Business Review. We looked at studies out of Dubai, out of Indonesia, and we looked for the critical success factors. And we basically did like a signal to noise kind of study, like a Venn diagram. Like, what are the most common denominators these studies are finding as valid? And what are the overarching umbrella terms? And there were 8 critical success factors. That's what I tell people. There's actually 9. There was self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And these 8 umbrella categories encompass everything. You could talk about leadership or AI or cybersecurity, all that fits under them. But there was a 9th, and it was government and economic conditions, a 9th factor that impacted business success. In our research, we felt, and this is part of why I want your opinion, because part of my podcast is interviewing people that can speak to and either disprove or tell me my research is foolish. But with government and economy, we felt that as a business owner, it's really hard for you to change the government or the economy. So the best you could do is focus on the other 8 factors. I thought maybe you might be a good person to share some insights on that, because for a lot of business owners, they're so busy trying to just run and keep things moving. Like, you can, you've got, yeah, I'm not even sure if I articulated my question clearly, but can you speak to that a little bit, that dance?
I think I can. I actually, my undergraduate major was in economics with a certificate in what's called political economy, which means that I have a great deal of interest in how governments manage economic topics or economic matters. And as a lawyer, that's something I interact with quite a bit. In fact, the case that I became best known for, which was Mattel versus Tam. So that was a case where the United States government refused to issue a trademark registration or to register a trademark for my client, which was a guy named Simon Tam, an Asian American, who wanted to register the name The Slants for his band, which is all Asian American guys. Now, apparently 100 years ago, this was what people might call Asians, his slanty eyes, okay?
Yeah.
I never heard anyone refer to as a slant, but this is what they call reappropriation. We want to take what an ugly thing that people called us and put it in your face. Okay, that's cool.
Sure, whatever. Sticks and stones.
Trademark office. So the trademarks office says the law prohibits us from registering this because it's disparaging. It's a disparaging trademark. And my client came to me and said, this is ridiculous. I should decide whether or not I don't need the government to tell me whether I'm allowed to disparage Asians. I'm an Asian myself.
Right.
And actually, as we thought about it, we realized not only should the government not tell you that, it shouldn't tell anyone that. It's really not up to the government. If, in fact, somebody wants to disparage Asians in a trademark, then they're a-holes, but the government shouldn't have anything to say about it. We ended up, so we appealed the rejection of the trademark registration. We went up through the entire system and ended up winning the United States Supreme Court, which held that under the First Amendment free speech guarantee, the government can't choose sides and decide whether a trademark is disparaging or not disparaging, and he got his registration.
Good.
You can sometimes fight City Hall. What you can't fight is the market. Allow me to continue a little bit.
Yeah.
People said to me along the way, Ron, if you win your case, there are going to be all these trademark registrations that are going to be nasty and offensive and hurtful. And is that the kind of world we really want to live in? And I said, we don't want to live in that kind of world, but I don't trust government to decide what kind of world I should live in.
Right.
I said, not only that, though, trademark registrations are only granted in the United States based on use. If you have a trademark that offends the market, you're not going to use it.
Yeah.
You're not going to use it. And therefore, people think that trademark registration is you send it to the government and then they give you a piece of paper. No, you have to prove that you use it and that you use it in connection with certain goods and services. The best example of this is while we were litigating our case on a parallel track, the Washington Redskins were fighting the same battle because a court in Virginia had decided that under this same law, they weren't allowed to keep their registration for Washington Redskins because Redskins was disparaging. Now, I don't know how it's disparaging.
Yeah.
But in the world of political correctness, as we used to call it, now we call it woke, someone decided that was an inappropriate trademark and a judge agreed. They ultimately benefited from my success and the success of my colleagues. It wasn't a Ron Coleman deal. It was a big team of people, but we're allowed to keep the trademark registration, but there is no Washington Redskins anymore. Why? They had to change the name anyway, not because of trademark law, but because enough people were offended, or at least they perceived it from their business point of view, that enough people were offended. And therefore, the market took care of itself.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I actually have a similar, it's different, but I had a client who operated in Latin America, and he was in the relationship. He wasn't Jordan Peterson, but he was
in a relationship.
In the relationship, relationship coaching, counseling. He was a psychiatrist. A clinical psychiatrist, I guess.
Okay.
And he was helping couples and relationship advice and all this sort of stuff. And the name of his company, I'm paraphrasing and I'm changing it for whatever. I don't have to remember, but it was essentially like How to Conquer a Man was the name of the brand, like something like that. And when he instead changed it, so it was a little more like soft and flip, he found a spike in sales. And what he found out doing some focus groups was that people were high and nervous about having How to Conquer a Man show up on their invoices and their bank statements and getting emails for How to Conquer a Man. The woman didn't want,
Don't try to tell that to Andrew Tate. There's a whole bunch of guys out there selling, and I know that you changed the name, but there are people who sell lots of aggressive kinds of approaches to relationships and to dealing with people.
Sure.
But that's a niche that they are working on, and that they might be. One of the things I'm on social media a lot. That's how you found me. And my wife is always saying to me, and she's a brilliant woman. She went to Stanford Law School, brilliant writer, very insightful, but much more risk averse than I am. And she's always saying, Ron, do you have to say that? You're going to offend so many people. So many people are not going to. I said, Jane, I don't need 100%. I don't even need 80% of the world. I just need the 20% or much, much less than that, who not only agree with me, but who respect me for saying it like it is.
Yeah.
There's plenty to go around for everyone else.
I believe in a meritocracy. If my truth is working out, then let's do it. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words don't hurt me. Obviously, I think there is an element where social media, people get behind the keyboard, they say things they wouldn't say in person, per se. But to the same point, it's just words on a screen. Like, I feel like we're so far detached from the food chain that we've got all these made up problems that we need to entertain ourselves that have no, like, I, when I look outside and you see the birds and the bees and the squirrels, like they don't have weekends. Squirrel's not like, hey cat, come back on Monday. It's my holiday. Like that just doesn't exist. My daughter who's five, I taught her this quote. It's one of my favorite. Every morning in Africa, when the sun comes up, a gazelle wakes up and it knows it must outrun the fastest lion or it will be killed. Every morning in Africa, when a lion wakes up, when the sun comes up, a lion wakes up and it knows it must outrun the slowest gazelle or it will starve to death. So the moral of the story is it doesn't matter if you are a lion or a gazelle. When the sun comes up, you better be running. And that really articulates my approach to life. We got to get stuff done. I don't have time to sit around and talk about what label I'm going to call you or not. We're going. Anyways.
So obviously you have made, among the other things you do, but you've made this podcast part of the things that you do. Even though we're talking, this is still something you do. This is value that you create and you put out there in the world. It's a way to bring people to get attention to your services and your personality and to interest them in the things that interest you and the things that you can do for them. And that's value added.
100%. And if they don't like it, go, it's fine. Go somewhere else. It's okay. So Right. Now, and to speak to that, and I guess we're getting more into your field, interesting things were happening. I interviewed Dr. Robert Malone long before I feel like he was on anyone's radar. I interviewed him August 2021. I published it September 2021, and my downloads disappeared. And my reach disappeared. And I even have a notice from Facebook. They took down a post I made in March 2020 about 7 studies showing chloroquine phosphate being effective, and they Facebook jailed me for that. And this is something that's caused a lot of people to censor themselves in their own speech. We're entering into the future. I'm just curious to see, we got this battle. There's X, there's Meta, there's all these Reddit, where I think China invested $150 million into Reddit right at the beginning of the pandemic. There's all these places, these public discourse places where you're engaging in the community. It's if someone comes to my house, I get to dictate the rules. It's my house. And so maybe you could speak to that a little bit, because to a certain extent, I do feel like if Facebook doesn't want people talking about certain things, then okay, it's their house. But
I've spent actually quite a lot of time in the last couple of years thinking about this issue and writing about this issue. A lot of people come to me and ask me if I can help them get their accounts back.
Right.
Less so now than a couple of years ago. Yes, Facebook and Instagram are terrible. Absolutely. YouTube's terrible.
Yeah.
Twitter/X have gotten much, much better. You're right. It's their house. Not prepared to accept the argument that some people make, which is that these are public forums and they should be completely open. I think a lot of the rationale that people do argue, like of the free speech right, of the First Amendment right of association, of Twitter to not be associated with certain kinds of speech, that's BS. No right. One thinks Twitter is saying something if someone nasty says something. Here's the thing, though. What I do think is when you have rules, when you say, look, come to my house, I'm going to have a party. Come on over. Here are the rules. And then you don't apply those rules. Or you tell me to leave without telling me what rule I broke. Or you apply them to some people and not to other people. Oh, wait, hold on. It's still my house, right? Still my house. Yeah, except one thing. I could have gone to the movies tonight.
Yeah.
I could have gone to someone else's house tonight.
Yep.
And when you say to somebody who has spent years building up a social media presence, or in the case of Facebook or YouTube, a business that's maybe worth hundreds of thousands of dollars to them, and then pull the rug out from under them saying, it's my house. You never told me when I built the house that you reserve the right to cancel me because I interview a renowned epidemiologist who disagrees with what you, and who the hell are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Think is the correct answer on the topic of what's the best. So there's a fairness issue. There's a consumer protection issue. I have 245,000 followers on X, okay? I'm a big contributor to X. People spend more time on X because Ron Coleman is there and I grow the platform.
Right.
But what I expect as a consumer is that you won't arbitrarily screw me. So that's where I think the soft spot is on the it's my house argument.
Right. No, I agree. And you really got to be careful when you build your house on someone else's land. I helped a client.
Oh, yes.
We grew his Facebook page from 30,000 followers to 300,000 followers. And then it was like January 1st, 2014. Facebook introduced the boost post feature. And so we went from getting millions of impressions per week to getting maybe a million. And we would have to spend over $1,000 per post to get the same reach we got before. And that speaks to exactly it. It's almost like a betrayal. It's a stab in the back. You make a deal with someone. Hey, I've got this software. If you come and you sing and dance and be the entertaining bear, and I'll do the software, you'll draw the crowd and I'll help everything run and scale and you can reach people. And we have this great partnership. But now I'm going to charge you a fee for every time you want to sing and dance. I agree with that. That definitely makes sense. I guess there's also questions of how do you control that sort of like free speech versus manipulation of the zeitgeist, so to speak? Like, how can you speak to that at all?
Number one is apply rules consistently. Mm-hmm. Number two is transparency. Don't tell someone they violated the terms of service and then not tell them
what they did. I hate that.
Three, fairness. Give me an appeal procedure and make it meaningful. Everyone knows YouTube's appeal procedure is not meaningful. Alternatively, on platform manipulation, where people really game the system, I think any system is entitled, and not only entitled, it owes it to its other users to protect them from that. Just as, by the way, I do think it makes sense for a platform to protect its users from abusive and even hateful speech. Again, it's your house, as long as you set the rules up and consist and keep them consistent.
Yeah, I remember I was living in San Diego at the time. I woke up one day and rolled over and went on Facebook, and I saw a video on my newsfeed. This woman was on her hands and knees with a bag over her head, her hands tied behind her back. And this guy was standing beside her, and he proceeded to pull the bag off, grab her by the hair, and cut her head off. And that was how I started my morning. And I was so shocked. And it was just, that just ruined the whole day. It was just, I never expected to see that sort of thing. And we've got technology we've never had before now. And so I understand the pressure that some of these platforms may feel. And I don't have an easy answer for it, but I think it's just a tough, I don't know what else to say about that. But just when you talk about how much of it is censoring, obviously that sort of stuff, and these psychopaths that they want to be famous. So they upload a live of them doing heinous crimes, running through churches, whatever, hurting people, versus allowing people to connect. So it's an interesting.
These are great challenges. These are definitely real challenges. And we can't hope to solve them until we are honest. And what Facebook, when we see that Facebook's main interest is spying on you and selling information about you to businesses, and that YouTube will take down a video because there's a 4 seconds of music in it that no one has listened to for 17 years. But on the other hand, 60-70% of everything on there is just outright copyright infringement, like all these Family Guy episodes. YouTube can't be honest because its business model is based on copyright infringement. Fine, I get that.
Right.
We're not, and Twitter was so overtly political. It just was unbelievable how dishonest. And that guy, Jack, what's his name? The old guy.
Jack, the founder of Twitter. It's just Jack. I just know he's Jack and he's into Bitcoin.
And he would get up there and lie to Congress like nothing, and nothing. There would be no consequences. So when it becomes an honest conversation, then we can talk about what might make it work, but it's not an honest conversation.
Yeah, I think that's you're really hitting the nail on the head, that we really have to try to pursue truth as best as we can. I think that's an incredibly important thing. When people start peddling things because it's in their interest versus it's the truth, as a species, as a society, as a civilization, we have to be careful, because you're really starting to lead down a path that only benefits the few. If we assume that the truth will set you free, and that was something I found that was interesting, actually, in our study, do a little bit of a sidebar. We found that religious communities were fertile ground for startups. And the theory behind it was that there was a baseline of morality. So there was ease in conflict resolution and matching set expectations. And
Or at least of, even if everyone isn't moral, there's shame.
Right.
You're not going to screw someone who's part of your faith community. I speak from the experience of being an Orthodox Jew. Everyone is married to everyone else. Like, we all know each other. And if you do something that is notorious,
yep,
it affects your children and your grandchildren and who your grandchildren are going to marry. And that's called consequences. And now that we have this one gigantic global world, and as you pointed out earlier on, all this, not whether anonymously or otherwise, a lack of accountability for what people do and say, there's going to be a lot of problems.
And a lack of, there's knowing, and then there's the visceral knowing of experience. And so the lack of the majority of people having kids, I feel like, is a visceral lack of knowing their actions will have consequences far beyond their lives. And I think that also partially feeds into it. What about for posterity's sake? I felt like at one point, I felt almost bored with life. I'd done everything on my bucket list. I've climbed Mount Fuji. I speak 3 languages. I'd knocked everything off my bucket list. I helped people make a million. I was never really into money, but I'd helped people make a million a couple of times over. I traveled the world. I did all these things and I was very bored. Now that I have kids, I feel like I was playing checkers before. That was just about me and my wants and needs. And now that I've got kids, it's 5D chess. I'm playing my actions now. Where am I going to live? And who else is living there that's going to impact my daughter and who she's going to marry and where their kids are going to be? Like, it's 5D chess now. And that's just a whole, there's a lot of people that are just caterpillars that are never really becoming butterflies that really can, for the people that love the strategy game, that can really look at life and for what it is, that's a multi-generational event that we're all trying. We're all here because of ancestors before us, everything that they did. It's the question of, when do you become you? Are you when the sperm meets the egg? Are you when you come out? Or are you when the heartbeat starts? Or are you in the cascading series of events that had to coalesce for you to be conceived in the first place?
Like, exactly. And not only that, you are. What is you? Is it, if you hit me, you hit my hand. I'd say, okay, you hit me, but you hit my hand, hurts. But it's my hand. This is something I own. But who's the I? Who's the I who owns this? Who's the I? You hear people assisted suicide. It's my life. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it really your life? What is it? What is it? What? That's, it's your body. Granted, but who's the you and where? What does that mean?
Yeah.
So when you have kids, you start thinking about those things and understanding them, as you point out, in a very different way.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So where do you see things going? If we fast forward 5-10 years, we're having a lot happening geopolitically, economically. Obviously, there's a lot of technological disruption. For business owners and the business community, what do you see coming down the pipeline in the next
it's
5 years?
It's very hard to, so there's a crack up coming. A lot of things are resting on foundations that are not really there. Government, the financial system, the legitimacy of political systems. In the United States, we have major political problems where there's an utter lack of accountability. And I saw a video a few weeks ago that blew my mind. I mentioned it on someone else's show. The sewer system in New York City cannot handle any more construction. In fact, it reached its peak decades ago. No one will ever fix it because it takes decades to fix. And you will never be in office to appreciate the benefit of that fix. So problems like debt and how we raise our children and the nonsense that we're teaching them, people just don't look at consequences.
Right.
So a lot of things are going to crack up. Government prints money in a way that is unaccountable.
Yep.
People don't have to deliver value, but they expect an easy life. I simply don't know what it's going to look like, because you do have in the Muslim world millions, maybe billions of people who are absolutely prepared to put their lives on the line for what they believe, whether it's right or wrong, in a way that many people in the West absolutely cannot conceive of.
They don't want to even get up to do some push-ups, let alone fight for something.
So it's not, one thing I can tell you for sure is that I'm a bit of a student of history. It has always been the case that people have always argued that it's never been this bad. It was always better.
Right.
And somehow in his wisdom, God decides to keep the world spinning and to keep us here. And sometimes amazing things happen. I don't want to get too over the top on it, but if I would have told you 5 years ago or 3 or 4 years ago even that X would be bought by a multi-billionaire who is going to basically free it and completely change the entire way the world gets news and information over a couple of years. I don't know if he's going to stay in business, but I do know that he's changed history. You just never know where things are going to come from.
Yeah. I felt like I had an epiphany maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago. I was thinking about this and the whole good versus evil thing. And I do feel that we are in a battle of good versus evil, but I realize that I don't think it's that good defeats evil. I think it's the things that we associate with evil ultimately are self-defeating. That's the snake that eats its own tail. And so the truth is that good outgrows evil because evil is stagnant. And I don't care. I've got friends with...
making a very important point. You're making a slightly different point. I'm always explaining that it always seems like evil has the upper hand because it's always easier to destroy than to build.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you're pointing out, destruction is not building.
Right.
It leaves you with nothing.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I don't mean to pick on anyone, but I think that this might be, I'll put it towards this way. I think this might be why some religions are against homosexuality. I don't care what people do behind their bedrooms, but because there's no offspring. It's not so much that it's evil, it's that it can't propagate itself. It's an ideology that's doomed to eventually fail at some point in time just because there's no one else to carry that torch forward. And the more you onboard people into that, the fewer kids there's going to be. And so it's one of those things. And again, I don't have any whatever, but I think
I certainly understand.
Yeah. But I think that kind of proves the case. When some talk about good versus evil, it's not that it's necessarily evil. It's just that's, if I'm trying to get, I think of this even in terms of workouts, like some of the movements that I do when I do my workouts, I don't do bicep curls. I'd rather do a pull-up because I could do a bicep curl, but all I'm going to do is work my bicep. But if I do a pull-up, I'm going to work my bicep, my forearm, my triceps, my lats, my abs. I only have so much time on this planet. I want to do the things that are the highest impact. I'm doing this podcast with you, this recording. People will be able to listen to this. This is an hour that we're spending that people will be able to listen to for years. So I want to have the highest impact with my life. And so that's what I think when we talk about good versus evil. It's the things
that someone who obviously seeks meaning in his life. And that is, as you mentioned, you tipped your hand when you said that you're not all that interested in money. We all know that we need money. We all know that we have to support our families. And also nice stuff is nice and fun stuff is fun and freedom. But it can never be a substitute for meaning in life.
Right. Oh, 100%. 100%. And for a lot of business owners, I think they feel that way. And so can you maybe talk, if you feel that the government is relatively hostile towards you, any tidbits for how to continue to engage in business? A lot of people,
I think it really depends on the kind of work that you're doing. We're in a time now, you see, the problem I think that we have now is not just that government is hostile to a lot and to a lot of people and a lot of points of view, but that so many people are comfortable letting the government have a say about who should succeed and who should be allowed to express themselves. And that is a gigantic problem. You can't really run away from this. Mm. You're living in the Philippines now. God bless you. I'm old enough to remember many different cycles of how things have been in the Philippines.
Yep.
During the Marcos era.
Yep.
It was not a free place.
Yep.
You never know what's going to happen. And there have been some extraordinarily tense times in Philippine history, even in the last few years. You can't really run away from human affairs. You got to find a place where you feel comfortable. From a business point of view, it obviously makes sense not to make trouble. See, I'm a little bit different because I attract this from people who make trouble and who want a lawyer who is not afraid of the government. That isn't going to work for a lot of people.
Right.
But the thing I always say is that if you don't stand up and say what you believe in, you are going to make it harder to do so in the future for yourself and for others. Because when you do speak up for what you believe in, and when you do what you believe in, you give encouragement to others to do the same. And that makes it easier for everyone. And it makes it harder for those who are hostile to stop you. But when you go along with oppression or with intimidation, more and more people are intimidated along with you.
Right.
And you may not have the option in the future to say, this time I'm not going to say anything. And look, you're an adult. You have to know when to fight back and when to just, sometimes someone steps on your foot on the grocery line. All right, it was an accident. Who cares? Yeah. I don't, even if he did do it on purpose. I'm Jewish. I know sometimes when I'm walking in the street, someone has muttered something to me. It isn't always worth stopping and having the fight.
Yep.
I'm just going to keep walking. You know what? This is a person with a mental problem. I'm not looking for trouble. You have to pick your fights.
Right. 100%. I really agree with that. And there's a couple of issues with this as well. You talk about the issue of a lot of people just complying with government overreach. There's a great talk Greg Glassman has given about how markets are ultimately unknown and unknowable. And I'm paraphrasing here, but if I asked you how many people are in market today to buy a Tesla, you might be able to look at indicators, keyword searches, website visits, but ultimately the true number is unknown and unknowable and constantly fluctuates. But everyone can recognize excellence. So if instead of your guiding light is excellent in solving that problem for that group of people, that will see should see you through the ups and downs. But the problem is when you give everything over to the government, you're handing everything to a master planner who may or may not have all the information. And their decisions have sweeping impacts on everyone. And that's almost where, decentralization, let the people vote with their dollars. And I want to ask you about this too. I've heard somewhere that all monopolies are propped up. Ayn Rand said this once upon a time, that all monopolies somewhere along the line are being propped up by government. Do you suspect that's true? Or are there...
Before the Sherman Act was passed in 1895, there were monopolies, which were, you might say they were, thinking through this question, what the Sherman Act did was make monopolies illegal. And previously they had not been illegal. Hmm. But what I imagine Ayn Rand is saying is the only reason you could have these monopolies was because they existed in property and legal regimes, which made them possible.
Mm.
And if you had true choice in how to go about doing something, the problem is I've never really understood how libertarians want to set the rules. So Michael Malice once asked me, or gave me the opportunity, he came out with a book called The Anarchist's Handbook.
Right.
And one of the chapters was an essay by a lawyer from about 100 years ago, writing about why the courts should not be a government monopoly. And he asked me to read that chapter, and it was very enjoyable because I wouldn't have read that otherwise. I was not convinced by the argument, especially because I've been involved in many private arbitrations, and I can see how they can be every bit as awful as government justice. But I also don't even understand, if I can't make you go to court, if I don't have some kind of government, and I don't think, I'm not super familiar with objectivism, but if I don't understand how you decide what the regime of property ownership and enforcement is going to be. But what I would imagine she was saying was the government makes monopolies possible by setting rules that monopolies are able to exploit in terms of monetary policy and that sort of thing. So I'm sure there's some truth to it, but it is in a vacuum.
Yeah, I get it. Because I feel like society originally developed among the farmers, essentially, because they had all the food. And so the king had all the land with the food, so to speak. But then you have to keep the community safe from the bandits. So then it moves from the person with the food to the person that has the security teams. It's keeping everyone safe. But all of a sudden, now we live in these societies where it feels like the people who are supposed to protect us are taxing the hell out of us.
That's been a problem for a very long time. And people don't realize just how often in the history of so-called absolute monarchy, kings and emperors ran out of money.
Yep.
And they could only squeeze their subjects so much, and often lost power or had to find other ways of generating money. There is always this problem with the productive elements of society being subject to the whims, but also the wealthier you are, the more you have at stake, and the more need for protection you have.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't feel that might is right should be our absolute as a civilization.
No, certainly not. No. And that's one of the other problems I have with Ayn Rand, is that she's actually contemptuous, as I understand it, of charity, because she thinks that it makes people not be self-reliant. Mm. If you're a human being and you see someone suffering,
yeah.
it is a terrible thing for your soul to be able to do something for that person and not do it.
Yeah, fair enough. I know I want to be respectful of your time. I know we're approaching it here. Any thoughts on Bitcoin?
Yeah, my only thoughts on Bitcoin are it seems to be something that's full of surprises. And notwithstanding my economics education, I really don't understand the value proposition, and I will not invest. And I have a friend who's really trying to get me to put money into Bitcoin. I will not invest in something that I absolutely don't understand. And I think there are a lot of people who really do know more about economics than I do and about finance who feel the same way.
Yeah, maybe. I was explained to me that it's digital gold, right? It's digital gold. Anyone can open up a wallet. You can have as many wallets as you want at any time. And that's your trading platform.
But that's how different that is from gold, because gold is empirically, objectively scarce. Now
it's not, but they're constantly mining more. That's the problem, is they're constantly mining more. Full of gold.
Yes, but you don't have nearly as much as you want to, because there's not quite as much out, available to you. Yes, there is an artificial scarcity to some extent.
And I think part of it is the absoluteness of it, and then the fact that there's no way to shut down an individual from doing business with another individual. And then the carrying. I
think
just
that there are
with
a lot of
smartphone.
Potential. Yeah. And I do the idea of being able to do a certain amount of financial transactions without the permission of money center banks and without the permission of taxing authorities. I could see the negative to that. But frankly, we have been allowing law enforcement and security to be excuses for intrusions on our liberty for far too long.
I couldn't have said that better. Ron, this has been a great call. We could go for another couple hours. Is there anything
Don't,
I haven't
really
asked
nice
you?
Talking to you.
Is there anything
of course
I haven't
there is.
Asked you that I should have asked you?
No, it's okay. Just let me know where and when I can find this and help spread it, make it available for other people to watch and listen to.
Sure. And if people want to connect, they want to follow along and see what you're doing, where are some of the best places for them to get in touch?
Best place to find me is on X at Ron Coleman, RonColeman. That's the place to find me. Everything else that I'm doing flows through there. I'm on YouTube also, Ron Coleman Lawyer. Anyway, if you ever search for me using a search engine on any platform, use the word lawyer along with my name, or else you're going to find a very large bodybuilder who is not me.
So go find Ron, R-O-N Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, and put lawyer with it, and you'll find him pop up. Again, Ron, thank you so much for coming and sharing. I know you've got your kids, your grandkids, you've got your own following. Thank you for coming and sharing. All the best.
All the best. See ya.